Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking industry podcast where folks who build networks for a living gather in the virtual conference room to exchange opinions, talk technology, and chat with excellent industry guests. Today, we have one such guest in the form of TLF, who is sponsoring the podcast today to share with us about their network configuration products. I am Ethan Banks, network engineer, CCIE, and blogger up at packetpushers.net. You can follow me on Twitter at EC Banks and share with me on Google Plus via Ethan Banks. Mr. Greg Farrow is with us as always, and what is going on, Greg?
Oh, I'm stuck with the flu, Ethan, and I've had a miserable week with my health, but I have been blogging at Ethereal Mind on the odd occasion and also been making random Twitters on as at Ethereal Mind. And of course, you can try me on Google Plus, but I am losing the love for the Google Plus, losing the love in a big way.
Yeah, it seems like it's sort of dying, and I notice more and more folks on Google Plus aren't there anymore. Would you like to email these people that aren't on Google Plus about this post that you did? And that number keeps getting bigger and bigger as the weeks go by, I notice.
Yes, so that's my week so far.
And we've also got with us Carl Moberg from TLF. And Carl, why don't you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience and tell the folks what you do at TLF.
Thanks, Ethan. So I'm Carl. I work for TLF Systems. We're a software company out of Stockholm, Sweden. We work mainly in configuration management for network environments. I am actually the marketing guy, or the marketing alibi, if you like. We're a heavily tech-oriented company. I used to actually run the engineering side of things up until a year or two ago. But then we figured out that we needed representation in some of the external forums that any good company needs. So I spend my time talking to customers and partners, writing the occasional text about what we do, and I spend a lot of time in standard organizations. So that's the type of marketing I do at this point.
That's nerdy marketing then.
Very much so. That's the thing. I usually spend like 30 or 40 seconds too long talking about why my title is the way it is and kind of apologizing for it. It usually works, though. Usually works. People back down.
Well, in fairness, TLF is a pretty nerdy company overall. I was looking at all of your product literature on your website and reading some white papers and things. And what you guys do is pretty hardcore. Why don't you talk about it for a bit?
We're a bunch of software people that have been working in the equipment provider industry for a long time. Actually, the founding team has been working for a number of both networking equipment startups, but also for some of the major vendors out there. So what we started on was actually the premise that configuration management, and we started off actually on the device side, if you like, you know, producing software that sits on the switches and routers and all the types of switches and routers that, you know, current networks actually consist of. So they've had kind of written the management side of things, the management stacks, if you like, a couple of times, and figured out in the 2005 timeframe that it's probably now is probably the time to do one implementation of a full configuration management stack, which is typically some sort of a data store, all the northbound interfaces that network engineers like you guys know and love, like the Cisco like CLI, the Juniper like CLI, an SNMP stack, of course, a NetConf implementation, and a web UI and a various of APIs pointing in every direction, so that our customers, the equipment providers, can take this, don't have to spend 1.5 to 2 or 3 man years rewriting the same CLI engine once more. Just take it, integrate it, and off they go. And we're now off on a somewhat different tangent, which is taking the experience we have from all these years under the hood of all the major brands and all the not yet known brands of network equipment providers, taking that and bringing it to a centralized configuration management type of solution. Kind of, we like to think about it like we have polished the floor. We have a large set of customers using our stuff, so the floor in the network is pretty nicely polished with NetConf and other things. And we're now bringing out something called a network configuration server to the market that I think will kind of change things around a bit. It's completely focused on configuration. You know, it's decent, or actually pretty good at performance and faults, but we like to, you know, really take aim at the configuration part. And we think that's going to be an interesting proposition over the next couple of product cycles, if you like.
Now, you've got two main products. You've got the ConfD, which would be, I guess you could describe as the on-device product, and NCS, the network, or the configuration management server. Can you kind of compare those two products and explain to folks where they fit in? Who's shopping for these products? How does it make their lives better?
Kind of the same arena. And, you know, of course, every time I present the company, I talk about network management or configuration management. People tend to think about, you know, an EMS. But what we've been doing, and again, what we've been focusing on since we started the company in 2005, 2006, is to provide the equipment providers with a software stack. So we're doing something that is kind of unnatural, if you like. It's getting more natural. You know, not many years ago, companies like Ericsson did their own, you know, rack screws. You did their own hardware. They, of course, they had their own operating system. Stuff like that have changed. And so to the point that actually the equipment providers back in those times were starting to consider sourcing in, if you like, or licensing the configuration management side of things. A part of the software stack of any router or switch that is very bad balance between how hard it is to do and how much people that buy their stuff care. It is absolutely astonishingly hard to do for a single software team, for a single product, while, you know, customers just expect it to be great, which is was a nice just position to be in, and actually build it once, build it good, and actually get equipment providers to license it. So that's what we've been doing over all those years. We have had a great feedback from the market. We usually say, with my marketing hat on, that 7 out of 10 of the largest equipment providers actually license and run our software. So things you are logging into, you may actually run on our software, even though you may not be aware of it. Of course, people don't scream and shout about companies like us providing kind of the core management piece on their equipment.
That's because it's hard, though, right? So that software isn't easy, because it's also about playing with standards bodies and being part of a standards process and writing test suites to validate that the software complies to the standards compliance. It's not straightforward.
Absolutely, and there's I could talk about for hours. Of course, it's part of our the way we frame things. But there's two main things. You know, first of all, you don't get eager young software engineers throwing themselves on writing another CLI. Okay,
yeah,
they tend to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Number two, what is really hard, you know, the northbound interfaces, the CLI and all that, that's actually just a very small part of it. The hard part is to tie together what is an, you know, astonishingly heterogeneous set of software that comprises the actual forwarding plane, all the operating system services, everything in a decently modern chassis-based switch or router. That is just making that work as a one piece through a unified interface. That's where, you know, the tough
time. So by the time the company's selected a silicon fabric, selected a backplane, designed their line cards, put the firmware in for all of the line cards, and then got the supervisor, you know, the central CPU controllers in place to put the firmware in that brings all of those, and, you know, all the clocking on the back. By the time they get all that done, a lot of the developers are sort of, they've run out of effort about looking externally towards configuration and network management and monitoring. They sort of run out of puff, don't they?
You know, I'll tell you this. We've had, personally, I know of two occasions where well-funded startups have called us and said, we forgot to implement show configuration. You know, the configuration is there, but it's distributed among software pieces, parts, and hardware parts. We just don't have one way to fetch all of it and show it in a, you know, in a single view. Right. So that's the thing. And you know what? Actually, they're maturing. You know, I've been traveling the last weeks and talking to startups. Most of these guys and girls now know that we better at least consider configuration aspects when we kind of start doing our magic sauce, if it's hardware or software, and actually expose our early customers to that, because it's going to be a major headache moving from the lab into operational environments if we don't have show configuration and better.
Yeah. Now, so that's one product. So you're reaching out to people who are actually designing networking equipment, who are tuning into the packet pushes and saying, we have prepped, ready to go products that you know, software suites that you can license and go into our onboard, into your onboard software to deliver that functionality.
Right, right. So what we what we found actually over the last few years is that it seems like our current customers, which is the operators, the service providers, and the data centers, are actually coming back to the equipment vendors and saying, you know, we love your data plane, we love whatever, you know, magic thing you are weaving into your products, but you're severely lacking in programmatic APIs, you're lacking in anything that has to do with automation. You guys will have to actually come back with something that aligns better with our expectations of structured configuration management. Yep.
So the days of just producing a switch and getting it working and reaping in the money are gone. What we need now is network devices that provide rich management capabilities and rich feature sets back to the people like us, so that we know what the hell's going on in them.
To the point, we'll take a worse backplane. If you have a programmatic API, if you have this and that interface that will allow my team to automate certain changes. And of course, then they come back to us being their vendors and ask us, you know, where's the other 51% of your configuration solution? So that should sit in the center of the network, bordering on religious questions here, of course. But one way to think about it is the software stack that sits in the center of the network, kind of what Juniper is with Junosphere, for example, which is kind of a first comer to market, if you like, where they kind of pitch it like that. So. Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn to your second product then. You're talking about NCS, which is your network configuration server, is that correct?
That's right. So this is the outcome of that type of question. You know, Taylor, what can we do to add that next layer of software that will kind of hide the complexities of inside of our switches and actually what's going on between them as well to a service-oriented programmatic environment where then the operators can actually apply software engineering to the repetitive tasks, at least, or to things that needs to happen with high frequency and that are fairly straightforward and driven by business. We've actually worked with our customers to provide them, first of all, the equipment provider customers, to provide them with a software stack that they can take and, of course, offer to their customers, the operators, so they can actually start applying, again, software-oriented thinking. And yes, I know it's bordering on the whole idea of software-defined networking to this and kind of get rid of the, I know, of European operators that have a couple of hundred software engineers that are just maintaining the adapter layer, what I used to call the adapter layer between their, if you like, the OSS, the operating support system, and the network. And they would like that to come down to a handful. And to do that, they need a programmatic environment where they can, you know, in an efficient and scalable manner, kind of program the network. And that's what we've been doing with equipment provider customers. And we're also taking that directly to the operators. Some of them are already there mentally. You know, they want that type of software stack, while others rely on their equipment providers to give them that.
You've really been talking about the folks that make the gear. Is there product that you're pushing towards folks that are using the gear? Call them the enterprise customer, if you will.
Absolutely. So what I kind of sweepingly call the operators usually consists of a group of people, be it in an enterprise environment, and of course data centers is where we see most activities around this, that are interested in automating the configuration of the network. And it just pathetically late response to what you guys have been going over many times, which is the kind of agility, mobile nature of workloads, virtual servers, storage. Again, this is really coming back to the fact that some of the forward-looking operators, because not all operators are there mentally thinking that they should own software assets that automate their network side. Some of them are still heavily relying on the equipment providers, but some are there and they're turning to us, or actually we kind of meet in the middle at least, and are looking for ways to take their software competence, their software thinking, and apply that to the network, right? And that usually means that there are big operation companies, be that, again, service providers that needs to automate, for example, VPN setup and teardown, which is a big, huge problem, especially in environments like mobile backhaul. So people that are tasked with managing mobile backhaul links or virtual circuits while their networks are being built out in a frenzy. We see people struggling hard with, for example, BGP policy management when they have large networks and a large set of border routers. They really want some of that to be automated. Some of the video transport guys that are tasked with automating changes in video flows as the network evolves, where we see some interest as well. And just very kind of basic things. You know, if you talk to network engineers, they spend especially in operation environments, they spend a lot of time doing repetitive tasks, which basically just, it's typing or maybe cutting and pasting from an Excel sheet, the same thing. The things that they're doing these days, they do with such, or expect to do with such frequency, and they're so complex and they're so, you know, expensive to fail. So they are looking for some, you know, ways to raise the bar, if you like. And that's where we come in. And it's for particular applications, but they seem to, you know, the footprint seem to grow.
Now, a lot of operators would say, I've got a product or I've used a product that does this where they can take a configuration and push it out. But it's still a very manual process, and it's still, it sounds like what you're describing has more automation capabilities and maybe even the ability to react to certain network situations.
Anyone with a, you know, history in this business will tell you that this kind of idea has been around forever. And people have been thinking about it forever. And what, you know, there's a couple of things that we see happening that makes me believe. I've dreamt about this since I left an operations team in the late 90s at a Swedish operator and tried to get this to market since then, is that, first of all, you know, again, the frequency of change in modern networks, be it enterprise or data center operational networks or classical service provider networks, the frequency of expected change is just, you know, bordering on hilarious. And the complexity of each change, just setting up a simple carrier Ethernet, you know, E-line comprises of, let's say, 30 or 40 commands on each end of it. And and the customers expect that to happen. You know, I want it now, not next week, and I don't want to hear anything about a work order queue.
Yeah, how can you not do that repetitively? Why haven't you got it automated? Like, you talk to the guy who's configuring it, and he has to do them all manually, and you're going, well, hang on, you must do this all the time. How come you don't have an automated process for this?
We have operators sending their team in Saturdays between 2 and 4, or team, one guy, that, you know, because one customer really wanted more bandwidth between 2 and 4. He pre-types the stuff in the Cisco switch, hits enter, goes for a two-hour cup of coffee, comes back and removes the configuration, right? That's where the industry is today.
Yeah, and, you know, welcome to service providers who think that's a perfect way to work and then complain about how unreliable that is because people finger-fault stuff.
Yeah,
or because they haven't sanity checked it. They can't cross-reference a configuration change again. If you make a change in this router, what happens to this router over here?
Absolutely. And what we see then is that if most of us are actually computer scientists, we're a software team. We like to apply software-oriented solutions to it. And with the change of certain things also on the element layer, and of course I'm talking about NetConf and Yang, which are IETF technologies that we are very fond of for various reasons, that acts kind of, if you like, as an SQL for the network. It gives you a nice schema language. It gives you a protocol to address the things. Suddenly you take away what I usually call command-driven management, because what all the existing workflow solutions do is they send a number of commands to a device or a set of devices, and then they kind of grep or search for known error strings. And if an error string comes back, you know, they wave a red flag saying, calling the expert.
Yeah.
If there's no error flag, they say that probably stuck, right? Something probably, yeah, it probably stuck. You're fine. And what we are doing is leveraging the strength of NetConf to actually take that up all the way up what they usually call model-driven development. So with a model, you can actually, you don't have to send commands. You actually work on the model, you make the changes you like, and then you tell the software that is, for example, our product, that go make this change in the network. By the way, don't tell me any of the nasty details. Just go make that change in the network. And if you use things like NetConf, you actually take away a major part of that problem, a major lump problem tissue, if you like, and that are just gone. So instead of hiding it in massive amounts of Java code and pseudo transactions and things that some of the workflow engines do, you can actually take it out because it's an SQL for the network. And you have a standardized API, you have a data model for it, and you can actually work on that.
So what you're saying is that people who are software developers will use an MVC model, Model View Controller, to develop their software against. It's very fashionable amongst the Rubies and the Djangos of this world, right?
I'd like to back up. That really caters to the MVC people. And it's more important what you said last there is that the people that we see, some of the forward-looking operators that we talk about, they're hiring software engineers to do this. Hmm. They are not hiring more CCIEs or, you know, any type of certified engineer. They let these guys focus on what's actually not possible to automate. Expert tasks, setting things up, tuning things. But all the stuff that needs to be done frequent and that are complex enough for fingers not to be able to keep up, they want to do that with software guys. And the software people, of course, bring their own way of thinking. They bring their own tools. No, they won't. 25-year-old software engineer will not accept, tickle, and expect.
Yep. No. He wants to see Yang. So this leads into a conversation about Yang, which is a data modeling language for NetConf, right?
NetConf and Yang is actually the output of the IETF that in the early 2000s found out that nobody uses SNMP for configuration, actually, literally by a show of hands among the operators that usually gather on the Sunday before the IETF kicks off. So the IAB, the Internet Architectural Board, went back and said, people don't use our shiny tool for this. Here's a gap. So we need to do something. So they actually made a roadshow. They traveled to operators, talked about them, and this is all captured very nicely in RFC 3535 that I highly recommend people to read. And they came up with the fact that there's actually something missing. And the output of that work is NetConf, which is a protocol, and Yang, which is its associated modeling language, kind of SMI or the MIB language for SNMP. And NetConf provides many of the features that the operators already then knew would be required for some sort of automation, which includes things that are obvious to software people, but not so much to us poor network engineers. Things like structured error messages, things like validation phases. You can actually ask the box, is this a valid configuration that I'm proposing? Things like transactions. You can actually do two-phase commits over many boxes. So it's just a number of very well-known kind of software-related features that is built into the protocol and just takes away so much pain from
software. If you've ever done any programming in Perl around XML, or you've worked in Ruby around XML languages where you can transform commands using XSLT, or you know, things like this, you'll look at Yang and you'll go, "This is perfect." And certain people might look at Yang and go, "That looks an awful lot like Juniper's Junos CLI." There certainly seems to be some similarities there.
Yeah, you can imagine ITF, like every standardization organization, is relatively political. So we had a long discussion about the format of the language. We actually started out with XML schema, but threw that overboard because not even the XML schema experts could give us error-free XML schema. So we came up with something that programmers are generally happy with. Yes, it also resembles JSON if you look carefully at it. You know, we actually designed it to be easily readable. That was priority number one. People should not be able to go through, you know, a MIB reading course or anything like that. It should be easy to digest for the casual reader. Use Emacs. You don't have to have an IDE, right? Even though IDEs may help. So it's actually pretty readable, pretty straightforward. And it's really taking off. We see a lot of companies using it for various things, actually also kind of bordering on outside of NetConf. And you now see some of the larger vendors publishing their Yang models, and you'll definitely see more of that.
You know what I find strange is that the Yang models, the larger vendors are publishing XML APIs, but they're not calling them Yang models. Is that because they're not, or just because the people like us don't know that they exist as Yang?
There's a huge difference between, you know, general XML APIs and NetConf as a specific type of, if you like, XML RPC protocol.
Yeah.
So there are vendors with XML APIs that have nothing to do with NetConf, and you know, a Yang model wouldn't be useful. And there are certainly vendors that use NetConf and are reluctant to release their Yang models because between the three of us, you know, now that nobody's listening, it's actually going to open up for a lot of third party for automation solutions that some of the major vendors may not be completely comfortable with, actually taking out some of the value that they're drawing from the expert.
Well, that's the OpenFlow argument again. The SDN is saying that the software that runs on the operating system becomes less valuable than it does today, and certain vendors would find that distressing.
OpenFlow is an even harsher torpedo, you know, heavier torpedo to the midship.
Yep.
And funny enough for us, it actually sparked a set of new potential customers because, again, if you look at the eventual, you know, packaging of controllers, you are going to expect something that is programmatic and reachable from the outside. So we certainly see controllers having NetConf going northbound.
Yep.
Or even if I may swear in church, a NetConf API to the pipeline model that OpenFlow produces. Not
let me just run a metaphor by you. I've been sort of trying to work out how to pitch people about NetConf and Yang, and let me say that NetConf is the protocol that communicates between the management station and the compute and the networking device. Yang is a data format which NetConf calls. Now, that conceptually is similar to SNMP, which is the protocol that is between the configuration management platform or the management platform and the device, and ASN.1 is the language in which SNMP is formatted. Is that a fair metaphor?
With one small difference, to be a little bit Ivan about it, ASN1 is actually called SMI. SMI is the language that you write SNMP MIBs in. But otherwise, I think it's a great metaphor. And again, I also like to think about SQL for the more software-oriented people. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your protocol to talk to the database manager, and you have your SQL schema. But yes, you're absolutely right. And that actually makes a whole lot of difference. And one important thing which kind of reinforces your metaphor is that many of the graybeards inside the IETF that wrote SMI, the ASN-like language that you're talking about, are actually co-contributors or kind of contributing behind the scenes to Yang. So this is the outcome of actually a battle that almost killed the SNMP intelligentsia that was called SMI-NG, you know, next generation of SMI. They were very battle-wary when NetConf came around and just agreed that, you know, why don't we take all the experiences we have around data types and structures and semantics and pour that into Yang. So it actually comes out of many of the same minds as the SNMP protocol.
Yeah, I've been tracking Yang and NetConf for a long time, and I've been wondering why it hasn't been coming to the fore faster. It seems to make a lot of sense to me. TLF here has, you know, the Yang and the NetConf implementation for the device side, for people who want to buy that product. And then you've got your network configuration server that people can use to query NetConf.
Yeah, and not only query, right? So the strength here is that you can actually go out on a limb and start changing configuration in a much more comfortable manner than you were able to do with SNMP, kind of peek and poke, you know, setting particular objects. So it's really a game changer in that we think, the way I think about the current state of the industry is that the cost of maintaining the software layer between what you want to do and where to do it, which is kind of between your automation system or whatever you want to call it, and the network element, is so high that it's not worth it. Okay, I know of companies that spend up to, you know, 80% of their revenue just keeping up with CLI changes, right? Every time Cisco changes a CLI in a command that has anything to do with mainstream services, all these guys will have to change their adapters. Yang and NetConf is, you know, specifically specified to avoid that. It's got a declarative schema that you can fetch in line. It's got validation going, so it's just a much more comfortable.
But scraping CLIs is not robust. One character, one space, one, you know, an OS version from a vendor changes and they take out a space or they add a dash for some reason, and your whole CLI scraping just goes out the window if your parsing engine is trying to just do straight regex matching.
You're absolutely right, and that just puts so many bad stakes into the ground, just so much inertia for any, you know, willingness to do better there. Because again, the cost of just maintaining, you know, over, you know, life cycles of you know, any major vendor is just almost, you know, it's obscene. It's just very hard to make a business out of it. And if we change that, things will kind of be more loosely associated, and there will be room for much, much improvement. And that's kind of what we're going for, actually.
Right.
Well, Carl, I was kind of curious how you handle situations where NetConf is not supported on a device, because NetConf and Yang have not been implemented by every network vendor out there, or if it has been implemented, it's not always implemented in quite the same way or quite the level of complexity that you might want for full support. So how do you deal with devices like that?
A good question, first of all, and it's of course something that we come across, not so much, of course, when we work with particular vendors, even though they have legacy, if you like, or current, a better word, product lines that may not have NetConf, while they have forward-looking product lines that have them. And just to give 15 seconds to, I remember Greg asking for kind of the speed of traction here. Actually, to be fair to the equipment providers, they're building it as fast as they can, but the product life cycles are just very slow. And retrofitting things like NetConf onto an existing product line is not for the faint of heart. And so back to popping back into Ethan's question, it's so what we usually say is that when we work with NetConf, actually there's magic, there's pixie dust or unicorn tears in a good way, if you like. things melt away, problem spaces, you know, just cease to exist. When we have to work in an environment where there's a mix, which is usually a Cisco CLI and SNMP, we are just incrementally better than anyone else. It's kind of the situation, right? So if you have the majority is actually CLI and a little bit of NetConf, we improve to the extent, you know, the amount of NetConf in the network. Otherwise, you know, we do clever tricks. We have, since we have a CLI engine in the product, we kind of turn it upside down so we can do very clever stuff with Cisco equipment. So kind of no programming needed. We understand all the majority of the Cisco CLI commands. However, you know, the problems really occur when Cisco and most of the vendors, they don't even have structured error messages in the CLI, right? They just write prose, if you like, for you.
Every department right. Makes up their own story, you know.
yeah, but it probably makes sense for the human eye. It makes absolutely no sense for our friends, the robots, right? They don't know what that those string of characters mean.
Yeah, so, well, so I, for the, one, you know, welcome our robot overlords, you know.
Absolutely, me too. I'm happy to work in the sugar caves for a couple of years. Yep. We kind of improve in the sense that we can provide CLI, CLI scripting without programming, because we know the CLI in and out, and because we know as an MP, we have an implementation kind of on the NCS side as well. But there's no magic, no pixie dust. We do as good as others, probably a little bit better, but we can certainly do it. Okay, so mixed environments are fine, and people are using it for mixed environments. And also, we find it to be a very good way to push for improvements on the element side. You know, people will see the difference between working with NetConf-enabled devices and the somewhat uncomfortable SNMP or CLI world.
Can you come up with maybe like a good use case scenario that would say this user had this sort of a problem, and we dropped in NCS, Confd, or both, and it helped them in this way?
One thing that I keep hearing from some of the service providers of various forms and shapes that I talk to is when a provider edge router that provides VPN services is full, right? Or you have to start moving your customer-facing interfaces across boxes. Something resembling hell breaks loose. There's much shuffling in Excel spreadsheets, trying to remember which physical port or VLAN assignment was tied to which customer, and how does that impact the full configuration of the box if I wanted to move it to a newly deployed PE router that stands, you know, a couple of views above it in the rack. Okay. So by having a formal model for the configuration of the PE routers, and also a formal model of what a VPN is, we can actually just say, take this service that is residing on that interface, move it to that box. You know, keep all the service parameters, but show me what the change will be in terms of network element configuration. That becomes a computationally highly tractable, if you like, solution. It's something that, you know, it's a very easy data model exercise, so, and something that is just extremely time consuming. I've heard, you know, a kind of days time frame being mentioned by the service providers I've talked about. For something that is, you know, physically insignificant, I just want to move that cord, that Ethernet port to that box, actually takes them a lot of time and is just very, very, very error prone. And since some of the major equipment vendors also allow a style of configuration where you actually kind of say 1, 2, 3, go, and you start typing your commands, and while you're working towards a goal state, the box is actually broken. You actually do have to introduce a couple of, depending on how fast you type, a couple of time slots of instability in the network, unless you have a very, very careful design and can do kind of hitless configuration changes across boxes. So that for me is one of the, you know, with my background in an operations center at an SP, something that, that really lends itself well to a robotic overlord or to an automated approach.
Well, flip it around then. I mean, conversely, are there situations where you feel maybe you're not a fit? The people that come at you, I don't think that you know, TLF really wants to get into this space.
A lot of them. I think the whole, you know, what can be sweepingly called kind of the readiness phase, when you set up new equipment and you just do all the basic configuration that kind of makes sure that all the packets flow in the right directions for a start, before you start introducing services or things that are driven by actually by customer activities or customer related activities. Certainly, you know, many of the things that relates to, well, take something easy, setting up a new BGP peer, for example, that is not particularly well designed for automation. It's a one-shot thing. It's fairly involved. You need some human intelligence when you're doing it, and you need to be careful around about when you hit the commands and you keep your eyes on the logs and things like that. It's more geared towards repetitive, complex, and very expensive to fail use cases, which I think, for example, kind of moving VPNs is one of those things. And of course, the whole idea of moving workloads, be it across layer 2 or layer 3 domains, just lends itself so nice to this type of approach that it certainly is something that our customers and partners are thinking about and actually doing.
Well, Carl, this has been a real interesting conversation on the products that you guys have at TLF. And, you know, assuming one of our listeners is pretty keen on this and wants to talk to you, how do they get in touch with you?
They should go to our website, which is kind of the first source of information for our stuff. It's at www.tail-f.com. You can imagine the pain I have saying that all the time. It's the Linux command, of course, so it's www.tail-f.com. And, of course, get in touch with me. C-A-L-L-E or kalle@tail-f.com. If you want to direct message me on Twitter, I'm at cmoberg or C-M-O-B-E-R-G, and I talk about configuration management pretty much all day, every day, so feel free to reach out. I'd love to talk about it.
And of course, we'll have some more details in the show notes and also some links to white papers and relevant content for you to go and have a glance at if you want to scratch the surface of that itch as well as get in contact with Carl.
Greg, as we're closing the show out, why don't you tell folks what you'll be doing this week? And
This week I'm getting prepped for Christmas, and I'm just clearing out. I've had a few weeks off work, and looks like I'm starting work again next week. So I'm furiously wrapping up on some of the side projects that I've been working on for Packer Pushers, and getting ready for Christmas, of course, because it's getting close to that time. And you and me have some more planning to do about what we're going to do for shows over Christmas, because we still haven't quite worked it out yet.
Yeah, but there'll be a good virtual workbench coming up, I'm quite sure. And, of course, for me, I'm wrapping up projects this year myself. And this week I've got 3 brand new circuits to turn up and 8 failover tunnels to build. And, of course, we're going to test it all and everything's going to be fine, because what could go wrong? Hey, I think I need an automation project.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Well, everyone, thanks for listening to the show this week. You can follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter @PacketPushers. Visit PacketPushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers community. Subscribe to our RSS feeds and donate to the show. Email your comments or questions about this sponsored show to PacketPushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.